Joe, do you like to play games?
Yeah. Peter says you have the best games.
Well, I have a game in my house that you might like to play. Would you like that?
Yeah. Okay.
Welcome to this continuation of the Stephen King Night Shift retrospective series.
This will be the best ride of your life, Marty.
Join Garrett.
You did this!
Matt.
I am God here!
And Adam.
This is bullshit, a whole bunch of bullshit.
As they continue to dive into each movie adaptation from King's short story collection, Night Shift.
I am a man of my word.
Contained in this leg of the Stephen King retrospective are the adaptations of Graveyard Shift.
There ain't no way they're going to get this place settled in a week.
The three Mangler movies.
Like I told you, there's no free lunch, no siree, Bob.
And the two Lawnmower Man films.
This is also on you.
Keep checking in, as the boys will continue going through each cinematic adaptation of the popular author's work, one movie at a time, in publication order.
How can you do this to me?
All coming up, courtesy of Percolated Media.
I'm in!
The Mangler 2 was released February 19th, 2002. Budget on this was $3 million box office. Not available, believe it or not. And this is directed by first and pretty much last time director Michael Hamilton Wright. Now, you guys might be sitting there thinking, we mentioned last week that last week's movie did not make too much money. Why are they making a Mangler 2? Adam, what was really prevalent in the early to mid-90s? I'll give you a hint. I was a huge part of it.
Buffy? X-Files?
Video sales. Video rentals.
Video stores made sequels.
The first Mangler film, as bad as it was, believe it or not, even though it didn't gross too much in theaters, made enough of a profit where Artisan Entertainment, who was just coming off the biggest horror film of all time at that time, The Blair Witch Project, scooped the rights up. They hired this cat, Michael Hamilton Wright, to come in and say, all right, we're doing a sequel to The Mangler. Do something with that. Go. And here we have The Mangler 2. They get Lance Henriksen, and here we stand. The Mangler 2, which is a movie that I will admit to kind of remembering. Certain scene I definitely remember. But Adam, you were huge into the computer thrillers back then. You know, we had The Net, we had Hackers, we had all these computer movies coming out at this time. What were you expecting when you sat down to watch The Mangler 2 for this podcast?
One, I didn't know this existed till y'all let me know about it. But Lance Henriksen, okay, I like him. And then I couldn't find this movie. And then I still couldn't find this movie. And then I couldn't even buy or rent this movie. This thing's not the easiest thing to find. My expectations, and I didn't even watch the trailer beforehand. All I saw was the cover art. And I expected some kind of weird, different type of take that didn't feel like it was anything that we had discussed last week.
Matt, your expectations must have been sky high after last week's film.
I swear to God, I looked at this poster and thought it was a rejected Hellraiser sequel.
It hella looks like it, doesn't it?
Looks like the end of Hellraiser 2.
I thought this was the one that was so bad, even Hellraiser didn't want anything to do with it. And some of those sequels are borderline unwatchable.
So you're not expecting much, is what you're saying.
Well, I saw the words Stephen King and direct-to-video sequel. That just screams quality.
Well, it's funny because you look at this and it really does have the feel of a script that this guy had written and then just kind of plastered Mangler 2 on it. But according to the...
You read the Hellraiser sequels.
Yeah, pretty exactly.
Isn't this the one with Henry Cavill?
All the Hellraiser sequels after 4 were spec scripts that were turned into Hellraiser movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
believe it or not, I listened to the commentary to this, boys. Yes, this movie has an audio commentary with the director, a producer, and one of the cast members. And according to that commentary, this was an idea that Michael White hammered out after he was told to make a Mangler sequel. So this was not something he had in the drawer that he pulled out and said, oh, they're paying me to make a Mangler sequel. Let me just put Mangler 2 on top of this and scribble out what I originally had. This was originally conceived as a Mangler sequel. I would not have guessed that in watching this movie.
No, I thought this was a sequel to The Lawnmower Man.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yes, we're definitely going to talk about that. Adam, how did you actually end up seeing this?
A little friend of mine called YouTube.
There you go.
Where they had the entire film. It's just not take. Maybe nobody even cares enough to take it down or file a cut. Maybe nobody claims this enough for copyright claim. But yeah, it was at least there to watch. So those of you who are like, where can I find this gem of a film? Search it into YouTube. Mangler 2, Electric Boogaloo. This fucker comes right up. Free of charge.
All right, so let's get into the film, boys. That's all the behind the scenes I really have. I have some more as I go into this, but what do you guys say we just kind of dive right in here? Because boy, what a banger of a film we have. Unless you guys have anything else to say.
Oh, download this film and get going.
So we're starting off. We're seeing this ninja-looking person moving through a building and uploading something called the Hantavirus into its mainframe, which was a real thing, by the way. As she's trying to get away, a car pulls up, and given that this is a movie with Lance Henriksen being top billed, you'd think that he's the one who's going to be stepping out of this car. No, it's someone else who says he's very disappointed in his daughter, and he has something in mind to get her in line. Matt, were you expecting Lance Henriksen to come out of this car? And how about this opening scene?
I was expecting Stephen King to get out of the car and have an obligatory cameo, because like him, I would also be very displeased with the people involved in this production.
Yeah, I mean, I figured that's who you're going to start this thing out with, so it was kind of a shock to not see him in this film as much as he is, and yeah, it's a different kind of start.
Yeah, I mean, this story would be much better woven if this was Henriksen, who was the father, right, and is also the head of the school. But no, we're going to have this other guy who, I don't recognize him from anything else. In fact, the only one I really recognize is Henriksen, so why would you complicate that anymore?
But by the end of this, I can't remember who's the dad, fuck it, just go.
Okay. We cut to some late 90s, early 2000s new metal as dudes in school uniforms show off their skills at punching each other in the nose. We then meet Julie and Corey is impressed by Julie's white socks as the token black guy of the film is hotboxing in a car that, my God, could there be any more pot smoke in that car? It looked like a goddamn fire was going on in there.
It might as well have been the Mystery Machine.
Yes.
You know, those you talked about that opening. There's nothing like a 5-minute slow-mo opening credit prep school scene to try to add this runtime to feature length.
Oh, it's the opening of Tokyo Drift, except it takes place at a private school.
Yes.
Or it's the trashy version of Saltburn.
And how about those white socks, huh? Oof. Mm. We then meet Dan the jock, who is far from impressing Julie, as good old Lance watches from above and starts initiating some amped up school security. Is there any secret what these bleachers are going to be doing later as they cut to him? I don't think so. So Michael White's really setting things up here, isn't he, Matt?
Yeah, he's setting up that I'm going to waste my time for 90 minutes. Because I will give him this. This is one of those movies that is very easy to distinguish when it was made between the new metal music, the fact that everyone is a 90s slasher archetype, not even 80s when it was actually kind of cachet. These are the tired ones, like the black friend, the jock, and the pretty girl who is borderline racist.
Hey, but you know what? I don't remember any of those other movies. Any of those other slasher movies that, Matt, you and I have reviewed a lot of, I don't remember a bodyguard character who kind of hangs around. Like this guy who is hanging around this main character, I don't know what he's supposed to be. Sometimes he's a father character, sometimes he's hugging and kissing her on the mouth. I don't know what's going on between these two.
I don't think the writers knew either. Yep.
And by the way, this Chelsea Swain, I recognize her. She was in some movies. She was in The Virgin Suicides, and she did a few episodes of The Shield. So she's kind of been around, as had her sister Dominique, who's probably the more prevalent one. She was in a Moby video. She was in Lolita, Adrian Lynn's Lolita. She was in Face Off. She was the daughter in Face Off. That's probably where she's most recognized from. So there's at least somebody else in this cast.
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw Swain, because I'm looking and going, why is she familiar? Why is she familiar? I loved The Shield. I still think it's one of the best cop shows that has ever been done. So I was like, oh, okay. What else has she done after the... Okay, not a goddamn thing.
And we're getting her sister. We're not getting her.
Yeah. But there's 1.5 people that I recognize in this film.
So the gang we are all going to be following starts making fun of a dude who loves porn. And he's into movies like Glad He Ate Her.
Oh God, this is the hallmark of Skinamax bad movie pun, like porno titles. Like they might as well have Shaving Ryan's Privates.
Yes. And is it really bad? I mean, this poor guy's in a wheelchair. This is the pleasure that this dude's getting. Is it really that bad that this dude's so into porn? They make fun of this dude so much. Is he really that creepy?
For a direct-to-video movie, how about you don't make fun of the thing that kept video stores open 10 years longer than they were going to stay open? You know?
You're not wrong.
He's right, but those secret porn rooms in the back.
Henriksen welcomes everyone back from spring break and introduces M2K, a brand new security system equipped with sensors that will not interfere with their daily activities, but will recognize each student that walks through any door.
Can't believe they named this the M2K.
Like, I know.
Like, Y2K, for those that don't know, like, that was a major, major undertaking. As somebody who worked computer management at the time, computers, like, that was a big, big worry because humans are so damn short-sighted. So, this film feels like it's made in 1994, and it's not. It's a 2000s movie.
Ah, early 2000s.
Yeah, but it's still post-Y2K. Like, this feels like the, contemporary to something like the Fear.com remake.
It's like a sequel to The Net, you know, that they couldn't get Sandra Bullock back. They made it a horror movie and went straight to video. That it feels like it should be made in 1995.
Well, this has such a hacker's aesthetic. It's that level of, oh, we think we're so cutting edge about what hacking actually means with, like, utilizing the school's mainframe and stuff, but you're really not.
Kind of got the same stereotypical kids, too, just dumbed them down even more.
Now, Lance Henriksen's interesting because, Adam, you know, there was a period of time I was having conversations with him weekly because he was interested in a script that we were working on, and he was going to be in it. And having conversations with him, he's a really funny guy, first of all. And he had mentioned that around this time that he was doing this movie, he was going through a divorce. And he calls this whole leg of his career his quote-unquote alimony movies, meaning the only reason he did them was to pay alimony. Matt, you mentioned last week that the fact that Lance Henriksen was in this didn't really get you that excited or get you even looking forward to watching this movie. Are you feeling like he's sleepwalking through this?
Yeah, but I felt the same about his appearances in Alien vs. Predator and Hellworld, Hellraiser 8. So it's, boy, that must have been a big-ass alimony because I can't imagine these movies paid a whole lot.
Yeah, exactly. Adam, you were looking forward to seeing Lance Henriksen here. Did you like what he brought here?
I was looking forward to seeing him because I like Millennium. I was really dreading thinking how far he has fallen to be in this kind of film. And, god damn, like, it's just, you kind of feel bad for him. Now, on the flip side, he is kind of trying at times, but it's almost insulting to watch someone who has talent be in this kind of film.
The Nick Cage syndrome.
Yeah. I'm shocked Nick Cage has not been in a Stephen King film yet.
Well, you know, he refuses to do anything for TV, and that's 2/3 of Stephen King.
Henriksen says if they cross the threshold without authorization, they will be electrocuted with, quote, a shock that would put down a 300-pound gorilla.
Because this is electric fence.
Yep. This is also when we are reintroduced to Joe, who is actually given a universal card, and our gang is hating life as they sit and ponder what's happening to their school, and Joe seems happy to have missed Braden's speech. Joe's bodyguard, as I mentioned, says that it's lame that her best friend is a bodyguard. Like, who is this guy, and what is it about these characters in these movies? Like, we mentioned last week, Ted Levine was hanging out with somebody who we never found out whether he was his brother, whether he was his brother-in-law, what the hell was going on with him. And this is the same thing. This guy, he's a well-built dude, good-looking dude. He's going to show up here. He's going to show up at the end, and we have no real idea as to why.
I thought it was her father putting her in this school, you know, because she's classic angry, smart goth girl. But then he's not. But then at the end, it feels like he is. But then her real dad shows up. So I wonder if he literally had filmed scenes as a father and as somebody else throughout the course of this.
Oh, interesting.
Well, no, they didn't have time to film it because they filmed this entire thing in 3 weeks minus weekends. They didn't even have time for different performances.
Well, according to the director, according to the commentary, he did say he had a lot of setups throughout the course of one shooting day. He got a lot done in the course of a day, so you're probably right about that. They did a lot of shooting in one day, and he was really, really proud of that fact, by the way. He bragged about it.
Yes, all the setups he did were of shots.
Yes, exactly.
Whiskey shots.
Oh, this production could have only afforded Jim Beam.
And, you know, in listening to that, it really seems like there was a little bit of hanky-panky going on, too, because they were really, really affectionate towards each other on that, and they were saying that this was one fun set to be on. So, apparently, King didn't come visit this set, like he did with Hooper on The Mangler.
No, they couldn't afford the coke to get him to show up.
Oh, jeez. This is the mid-90s. He was off the coke by then.
Wasn't he bedridden at this point?
Yeah, 99 was when that accident happened. Okay. So yeah, he would have, put it this way, this would not have helped his health if he had known this production was going on and he had to come to the set.
Not helping mine.
He would have watched this and said, pull the plug.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy, and we'll talk about this pretty soon. This is a guy who sued over the Lawnmower Man because they used his name and it was not his vision. So he did not sue to get his name taken off this. They do mention him in the commentary. They do talk about the influence. And we'll see an allusion to that movie in this movie. They do kind of a tribute to it. But yeah, I don't feel King in this production at all. So Braden says that the system is a quote-unquote efficient machine that becomes aware of the student's presence and is an early form of artificial intelligence. His associate calls it a little Big Brother-ish. The gang is then taking them to Braden's office, and he's angry at this prank that was pulled on him where he is not shown in a really nice light. I do like the vision that they show here of him just looking like a complete douche in this video that they pulled on him. But as a result, we're going to get the Breakfast Club of hacker movies.
I feel like John Hughes just rolled in his grave. When he-
And Braden's threatening, you know, you're not going to go to prom night, you're not going to graduate, so you're just going to hang around here.
It's amazing how this film decides that's how it's going to ensure that it stays cheap and, you know, limits its cast. This is the zero-budget version of New Mutants as to, hey, we're going to get five people, lock them in two different places, and that's how we're going to keep the budget down.
I also didn't know private boarding schools of this ilk had prom still.
Yeah. Right. I thought of that too. Braden then tells Joe that the school is his, not her family's. Emily is convinced that Joe is the culprit, and Joe says that Braden has a hard-on for her, which is why she's in such trouble. Boy, you couldn't get away with this nowadays, could you?
Well, it depends if it's a Catholic boarding school.
Out of anger, because I guess she feels picked on, Joe sits at her computer and enters a hacker girl chat, where she downloads the Mangler 2.0 virus, and she says that, once again, the internet is her friend. So you can get these viruses on some random website, I guess. I guess this is the eBay of viruses, and this is where we get the Mangler reference, as it's the Mangler virus 2.0.
I guess you can download it in an AOL instant chat.
Yeah, apparently. So Dan then enters her window because his card won't work, and she shows him patterns of snowflakes and quote-unquote Mando boobies. I mean, Mando brats. She leaves the virus and takes off with Dan, and we start seeing Mangler 2.0 at work saying, "You've been mangled."
Well, that's the most accurate freaking description so far.
Adam's favorite quote, "You've been 40 mangled.
40 minutes into this film, I've been mangled already."
We cut to creepy porn guy watching his porn as well as Emily working out as stuff like the lights start going a little haywire. So this is the weird thing about this virus, okay? Matt, you and I, we've watched Buffy. Remember the first season episode, probably the worst Buffy episode of all time, where Willow is talking to somebody online, and he ends up being personified as this big, you know, computer monster pretty much by the end of the episode.
And he looks like the end of the Lawnmower Man.
Yes. to go back to that. I thought maybe this virus was going to be that, where we're going to, by the end of this, we're going to see this virus personified as a robot or something attacking teenagers. But no, we're pretty much just going to have random tentacles and random knives and things that kind of attack people. That weird concept for a horror film, huh?
Well, it would have been the same thing because that episode ends with punching an electrical power line.
Yes. Yes, it does. Good call. Good memory.
Yeah, that remember, Buffy season one is not perfect, everyone.
No, Buffy season one's pretty flawed. Joe tells Dan that what they had before didn't mean shit. We didn't see our first death. 38 minutes in, by the way. That's a very, very long time for a horror film to have a death. And Matt, I couldn't believe it. A few months after we covered it, we see an Exorcist 3 reference. I could not believe this is what they did. Remember the jump scare in that film?
Oh,
remember
shit. That? Yeah, with the hedge clippers, yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what they're pulling here with this set of scissors behind this person who's kind of roaming around. We get a long shot of it. And they say on the commentary that's exactly what they were going for. They were referencing The Exorcist 3.
Yeah, this commits the cardinal sin of don't reference a better movie in your inferior movie.
Yes, yes. We talked about that last week as well.
This freaking hedge clipper on some type of stick wrapped in random stuff. This seems like a really bad horror porno come to life. Like, this is shot. That is the quality of what we have going. This is vivid video horror. I can't believe how bad this is. This is the first kill. Oh, shit.
And I have to give a lot of props to Matt here. Because a few weeks after we finish our first leg of the Planet of the Apes series, we have a production produced by the Banana Brothers. I thought that was genius, sir. Brilliant scheduling.
Thank the completionist who made me watch these.
We see an axe come down on porn guy as a butcher knife comes down on a slice of meat. The school chef, who, could this be any more stereotypical, this school chef? Like, here's another character. What the hell is he doing here? And by the way, why the hell does this guy live?
Yeah, it's like Freddy Krueger in the remake, where it's like, okay, he lives in the basement, apparently?
Apparently.
Why is he hanging around? Why does he stay the way that he does? Why does his accent change in every different scene that he happens to be in? I think he's French, Italian, and Southern States American by the time this film is done.
He's talking to himself, saying the school system reminds him of his ex-wife. He walks down and then gets trapped, so I'm thinking he's dead, right? Oh no, he's just stuck in the freezer and he's going to get rescued.
Why is this guy safe?
I don't know! This is the guy you kill, right? This is the guy whose comedic presence is warranted in a movie like this, and of course you're going to want to take him away because, first of all, it's a horror film. You need to kill some people. They don't do that with this guy. Like, it makes no sense.
Or it's a red herring. You almost kind of kill him throughout the film, but then you finally kill him at the end. We never get to the end.
We're then hearing about how alien astronauts invented the periodic table as Emily Stan, and what she's going to be in for the rest of the film, a bikini.
Not better. You know what? There's two things this film needed. If it was going to be this kind of abysmal, schlocky film, it needed some gore and it needed some nudity. You know where this film fails even worse than its script and director is in both of those things.
The blood here, especially when we get that first kill that I mentioned earlier, is non-existent. We get a few splashes. But
not even Heinz ketchup. This is Safeway Select brand ketchup they use for this blood.
We cut to Brayden pouring himself a drink, and then he notices that the system's mainframe is a different color. Julie and Corey, they leave for some nookie, as we see a girl pour her own self a drink as well. Now, this girl, this is Brayden's assistant. She hears a sound and she starts exploring. We get a close-up of a web camera as her hair gets caught in. Yes, this is supposed to be a laundry folding machine. This is supposed to be the reference to the mangler that they made. But this kill, it goes on for far too long, by the way. We're seeing her get one drink after another. And when it does happen, it's not really that satisfying. And, you know, what I will say is, as much shit as we gave last week's film, I did say that I thought there was a good amount of blood in that film. This chick gets her hair caught, and we just get a few drops splurs across the screen. And Matt, Adam, you just got through saying this is just ketchup, and we're not seeing too much blood here, are we?
No, and it cuts away. Like, it pulls on her hair. Suddenly it cuts to whatever $50 washer and dryer they could get at a local swap meet. And then somebody standing off scene just throws some ketchup on it. Have her scalp ripped off. Like, you can get a wig and do something, even with this cheap-ass budget and this shitty photography and directing, you can have some type of just gruesome gore and somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody.
The one thing that got mangled was the production budget.
And you know what else got mangled?
My soul?
The soundtrack in this. This is one of the most obnoxious soundtracks I've ever seen in any movie we have covered. It is constantly in your ear. And it shows up in scenes of suspense and scenes of chasing and scenes of just talking to one another. We have it playing in the background.
I should have just zoomed in on porn watcher speaker and just left some porn music playing through the rest of this. Just make it fucking campy.
There you go. And you know what? This is coming out a few years after The Matrix, right? And the Matrix sequels were coming out the year after. They are, like, making these references to The Matrix, you know, with the beginning scene and whatnot. But with this budget, you can't really do that, can you, Matt?
What budget?
Emily and Corey, they go in a lab as Corey pulls the same practical joke you see in many horror films of him getting his hand caught. Corey hears the chef and pulls him from the freezer, as we mentioned. He gets rescued. The chef says that the door locked itself and are making sure that he never wants to have sex again. And he says that something really weird is going on. No shit. Brayden, remember him? This is Lance Henriksen's character. He has disappeared for what, like 20 minutes at this point? Like, he's top billed and he's like gone half this film. So he shows back up and he sees that the system has locked on him, even though that they're cutting to spots that he could easily walk through if he wanted to. Some of the filmmaking here is so laughable.
Oh, this is amateurish to the nth degree.
Will gets a message from the computer that says, "Did you know the black guy doesn't always die first?" And this was apparently a practical joke on the actor himself, because when you're filming these scenes, these screens are, you know, they're blue because you're going to be adding stuff later. And this actor did mention, you know, well, I don't get killed first, right? Because that's how all black guys die in these films. Well, the director decided to pull a joke on him and put this message on that says the black guy doesn't always die first.
The funny joke, it's now been done over and over in things like Scary Movie, but that
Scream.
That,
yeah.
Yeah, Scream. But that's actually, for those that know horror, that's a good creative funny part.
Yeah, and Scream had come out, what, 5-6 years before this, right, Matt?
Yeah, I think we already had both sequels.
Yeah. He then gets another dated reference. Adam, do you remember the Weakest Link? Because I do.
Bye.
He gets called the Weakest Link before he's boiled to death, before the water comes down and is ultra hot.
But is it acid? Is it water? Is it boiling? There's no, it's just,
nothing's explained. Yeah, like this water's coming down. I'm guessing it's just like really, 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 really hot water. But we don't feel any of that. All we see is a hand reaching for the air as he dies. That's pretty much it.
That's more of an addition than we get to see in a lot of the deaths in this film, though.
True.
Sadly enough.
There's some more bickering going on as the chef moves his fingernails on a chalkboard and tries to gain control. But the computer is coming after them, and they're chased through the corridors. Emily climbs a ladder as the chef, Boyardee, as they call him. Joe kisses Dan as they head to another ladder, and we see the chef just kind of glide down the ladder because this is more amateur filmmaking. And then we see another Tobe Hooper reference. Now, Matt, when we covered Texas Chainsaw Massacre, We talked about the fact that that first movie opens up, it's almost like in a strobe light kind of way. You know, we're seeing flashes of a flashbulb going off and people going over some dead bodies and things in the beginning of that film. Here we see the light switching on and off and Corey smashed between the bleachers. This is supposed to be a reference to Toby Hooper because we're referencing better movies, right, Matt?
I guess.
If they can call it a reference to Toby Hooper, to me this is, we can't even show somebody get crushed in bleachers.
Yes.
I can't. Oh my god. Like, yes, you see bleachers, yes, they're going to close on somebody, we all know that. But all they do is show bleachers close, and I guess it closed on some McDonald's ketchup packets that squirt out the bottom. This, fuck.
Well, for the record, yep. If you're in boarding school, those are supposed to go in between toilet seats, not bleachers.
Jo says that she's sorry, as the virus she uploaded has been messing with them the entire time. And here's the tearful confession scene, as Emily also confesses that she is the one who wrote the letter after Brayden tried things with her. Now Brayden's just a scumbag who has actually tried to have sex with these girls. And boy, that doesn't play well these days, does it?
It's uncomfortable. There's no reason. It's a stupid inclusion, and it's only there because it's a movie of this time frame. I don't know. It feels dirty and it feels unneeded.
Yeah, this is one of the things where it's like, okay, how do we overcomplicate this and make it even more heinous than it already is? We go to the nth degree.
The chef says that he is wasting his life cooking hamburgers and hot dogs. And then Jo gets to a computer and tries uploading something to stop the virus as she's interrupted by something we weren't supposed to talk about until later. The Lawnmower Man. This seems to be where all the budget went. Was to this image that is this character. Adam, I know you've seen the Lawnmower Man. Did you see the Lawnmower Man in this particular image?
I saw the Lawnmower Man reference in this image. That's kind of what I felt. But I also see the end of Hellraiser 2, you know, Oblivion. It's just that kind of, oh, man, this is hard to watch.
Matt, did you think this was a reference to Job in the Lawnmower Man?
Oh, clear as day, to the point where I thought the studio cared so little that they mistitled this. Like, this is supposed to be the Lawnmower Man 2.
Yeah, or 3, because 2 had already come out. So they turn around, and there's Brayden saying that he's looking forward to expelling all of them. They make their way through a room of computers as a ripoff of Prodigy plays in the background, and we're seeing once again that we've been mangled. Emily gets a noose around her neck and then taken to the ceiling. They head to the gate as Paul pulls up and cannot drive through this fucking fence. Dan is then electrocuted as Jo cries at his side. The chef throws her a machete and wishes her luck. Jo walks in the building as she heads towards the basement. She heads in that direction as some weird Rob Zombie type aesthetics hit her face. The doors open and we get a 3-time shot of her looking. Because, you know, we need to repeat this shot 3 times. And remember how I said there was one image from this movie I will always remember? Lance Henriksen puppeted by this machine is exactly what I was talking about. This feels like he was in the makeup chair for maybe an hour and a half. And he said, I'm not going to give you too much. And goddamn, him puppeted by these wires, Adam, come on, you had to have laughed at that.
I want to laugh. I'm angry. Henriksen deserves better. I deserve better for having to sit through this freaking... God damn. You know what? I make the Hellraiser reference because... Just give me the box. I will send myself to oblivion so I don't have to finish this film. I am so angry once we get... And I want to laugh at this point because I enjoy even some of the schlocky parts of the Lawnmower Man, but... Wow.
Matt, what's worse, this or the Spice Girls reference that Lance Henriksen gives here?
This, because the Spice Girls one is significantly shorter. This looks like the frickin' Dan motorcycle hybrid from Nightmare 5.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, yep.
So Jo lures him in and stabs him as Paul shows back up with the fire extinguisher. And as old Lance is dying, what does he do? He spits out milk.
Was that a reference to Alien?
Yes.
That's what I took. I couldn't believe they did that. I couldn't believe he agreed to do that. To me, that's him just spitting in the face of what he had done before.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Alien later on this year, and I'm watching this and I'm thinking, God, is it just like obligatory for him to do this in films where he dies, you know, after Alien? Like, did he actually request that this happen? The Mangler virus is now destroyed. As Joe and Paul, they make their way out. They are met by her dad, who arrives by a helicopter. He tells her that he's sorry and that he loves her as they take off. And all she has to do is go through something like this, and all her goth aesthetics and everything are taken away.
It's The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Ally Sheedy.
I was waiting for the Simple Minds music to kick in at the end.
Simple Minds wrote this film.
I mean, you won't forget this movie, I'll say that.
No, you definitely won't. And once again, I'm just taken by the fact that the chef has lived.
Well, it's like Paul Soljay in Deep Blue Sea.
We cut to Joe laying down talking to her dad as she hangs up. And then we see a Palm Pilot. Adam, remember these Palm Pilots?
They were cool.
That says, you've been mangled, meaning they didn't destroy the virus. The virus is actually everywhere.
Once it's on the internet, it's like your dick pics, never going away. For example. No reason.
And credits roll on The Mangler 2. Boys, very short plot summary. Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give The Mangler 2? Adam, sir, unleash.
This is a movie. Thank goodness it was on YouTube, because if I would have had to pay $3 to rent this on Amazon or something else, I might have been even more vitriolic than I was feeling here. I would be sending somebody a bill. If I don't care if I had to spend digital credits, I would have sent someone a bill for this. There's no reason for this film to be made other than some type of weird rights thing. The actors in it are horrible. Half of them don't feel like actors. The other ones that are in there feel like, well, they need a check for something, and supposedly they did. That this actually has any attachment to the first one is a joke. It's the spec script version of the net, and they just decided to add the Mangler in the name. The kills are horrible. The dialogues are horrible. The effects are shoddy. Lance Henriksen being in this is an insult to a man that's actually done some good work. And I can't believe how bad this day. This is the worst Stephen King thing we have watched. And that includes the shorts that we had watched in our first round of going through some of the Night Shift stuff. This, god dang. I expected Children of the Corn to be where I would just start to get angry, but no, it's right here with Mangler 2. This is a 2 on 10, and that's a generous 2 at that point. And that's just because I like Lance Henriksen, and I guess because we got a bikini top throughout the second third of this film. Fuck. 2 on 10. You're welcome for the 2.
2 on 10 from Mr. Bunch. Goudreau, go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm going to say something I don't think I've ever said in the airwaves since we've been doing this shindig. This movie's too stupid for me to hate. But it also is one of the shoddiest productions I've ever seen. Like, this is not even a sequel. This is a slapping the name and making a checklist of teen horror genre shortcomings. It's a quote from All Movie, and that is such a perfect description. Like, this has no bare bones ties to the original Mangler, outside of one part involving a press, and it's not even a fully completed one at that. So for God's sake, there's no integrity to be found here, and quite frankly, I don't think this is worth watching, but I also don't think it's the worst thing we've ever reviewed, as crazy as that sounds, because it's so dumb and the plotting is nonsensical. The acting is like sci-fi level movie bad back when they made those. Like, you know, this is on par of like Mankiewicz or some crap like that. The Mangler 2 graduation day left me with my own form of student loan debt because I wasted 97 minutes of my time that I'll be paying interest on for years to come. This is a 3 on 10. I'll be a little bit nicer than Adam, but it's not good. In fact, it's awful.
Can I give one of my ironic 8 on 10s for this? No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that.
You do so. You will be mangled by me.
This is pretty bad. And, you know, it's funny because there are bad movies that, Matt, you and I have spoken about plenty of them. Bad movies that are enjoyable. We were the two people in this podcast who liked Maximum Overdrive. That is trash. This is trash, but the problem with this is, first of all, the filmmaking is really bad. There's a reason why this guy did not go on to do anything after this. There is a name associated with this movie, though, boys, who did go on to do things, which I'll talk about here in a bit. But let me finish my summary here. The acting's pretty bad. I hope Henriksen was able to pay that alimony because he's really mailing this in. The thing about horror films is, even if it's bad, like story-wise, even if it's bad setting-wise, if it's bad in any way, at least get the kills right. This movie doesn't even get the fucking kills right. And I couldn't even laugh at it. So this is a 2 on 10 as well from me. Actually, no, I want to raise it to a 3 because I think Lance Henriksen on those wires is such an image that it needs to be seen to be believed. And yes, it is on YouTube. So if you are inclined, don't watch the entire movie to get to that part. Don't watch the entire first hour to get to that. It is on YouTube. Check out that clip. It's funny as hell. But yeah, it's stay away from it at all costs. So this is a 3 on 10. Kind of stay away. But next week, boys, we have more sludge. We have The Mangler 3. And let me tell you something. This movie had a $3 million budget. Next week's movie is $150,000 budget. And next week's movie is more to the original's vision, I guess you can say. That's all I really remember of it. What are you guys expecting next week with The Mangler Reborn?
Expect to try to be finding a 1.5 to 2.5 times speed to get through this faster than I had to on this time. I expect that I know where to find it. I know where on this one. So you know what? I expect to hate it less than I hate this film. How about that? There's a rising recommendation.
No clue, and that budget line makes me kind of dread watching this. Like, was this shot on a camcorder?
Well, the majority of the independent films I worked on were between 80 and 90,000. This is only about 60,000 more than that. So I'll get into all the making next week, but I don't remember really much about the story. But boys, I mentioned a director associated with this that would go on to do huge things. You guys recognize the name Neil Blomkamp?
A little bit.
Neil Blomkamp was the director of the music videos that the guys who contributed to the score did. So if you are inclined to do music videos, maybe one day you also will go on to have Oscar-nominated films and then get a rejected alien concept. But yes, so I thought that was an interesting bit of trivia. But that's it for The Mangler 2. Boys, it's been really fun ripping on this movie with you guys. Doesn't seem like you had as much fun as I did, but let's just put it this way. Night shift, we only have 2 more stories to go after this. So that's positive, right? All right. Until next week, when we get to The Mangler Unborn, one step closer. It's so sexy when you guys podcast computer talk. Thank you, guys.
No one could have comprehension and attention at that speed. No one.
I did, Dr. Angelo. As a matter of fact, I think my retention is better at higher speed. Normal speed was only putting me to sleep.
That's impossible.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively on Percolated Media.
Very funny. I'm laughing my ass off.
Join us next week for an entirely new review.
I've synergized a tremendous amount of data, and you and I have proven that most functions of the brain are simply lying dormant, waiting to be awakened.
And if you like this review, please head over to percolatedmedia.net or search your podcast streamer of choice, for we have individual reviews such as Knock at the Cabin, The Black Phone, Megan, as well as additional blockbuster franchises like the films of Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio, the DC Extended Universe, Stephen King's ongoing collection, and many more.
I realize that nothing we've been doing is new.
And if you'd like to hear the boys talk about the film adaptations of Carrie and The Shining, please head over to www.bingemedia.net and click the Aftertaste tab.
No way to deal with these fuckers.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
Looks like you made the list, Nardello.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
You need to be led, just like everyone else. It's a basic need.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
Clean up this, Warwick!
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I ain't one of them burning baby flashback fuck-ups you see Bruce Dern playing, so quit your grinning.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
You better watch what you're saying.
I don't think so. I think from now on you better watch what you're saying.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is for review and discussion, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
Now, do you have any idea what a VC rat eats? Try raw American whole mayo, thank you.
It was at least there to watch. So those of you who are like, where can I find this gem of a film? Search it into YouTube, Mangler 2, Electric Boogaloo. This fucker comes right up. Free of charge.
Electric Boogaloo. Can you guys hear that? Can you guys hear the things going on in my apartment complex? There's, I think they're sawing something. Okay, you guys can't hear that. All right.
Hey, there's 1.5 people that I recognize in this film.
1.5 people. Oh,
she gets,
because of,
she gets
because
half.
Of Chelsea.
She gets half.
Okay. All right. Adam, you were looking forward to seeing Lance Henriksen here. Did you like what you brought here?
I was looking forward to seeing him because I like Millennium.